So, I was born in South Sudan in a small village called Mar. I lived by the Nile, and life was beautiful. I lived with my relatives. I lived with my cousin, my siblings. And I don't know about you, but I love cows, okay? Any cow lovers? I see. My job at age 7 was to look after the cattle. I was a cattle herdman. And unfortunately, that beautiful life along the Nile was taken away from me when the militia from northern Sudan invaded my village. And in that attack, I lost my parents. And not only my parents, my sister and my nieces are still in slavery today. 2.5 million people died in this war. But I was really young. I was about 6 or 7. I have to admit, I was not born in Johns Hopkins Hospital, okay? So when the attack happened, I was with my cousin looking after the cattle. And we escaped into the woods. And at age 7 years old, I keep asking Michael, are we coming back? Because it has been a week. And then 2 weeks. And realized that we are not coming back. That was the answer. And the next thing we realized is a bunch of boys from surrounding villages start coming. And the difficult part is, I had no idea back then we are heading to a place called Ethiopia. But let me describe to you the journey. The journey was very difficult. The enemies of northern Sudan didn't stop there. They were following us with their guns, with their tank. And by the way, they're coming with their helicopter of what we call the old Russian-made, the Antonov. So they were bombing us. We didn't have enough food. The difficult part is we didn't have enough food to eat. And I always ask people in this country, when was the last time you drank your own urine? We didn't have an option but to drink our own urine. Now, fast forward, the wild animal were very, very vicious, especially the lion. And a lot of people got attacked. A lot of people got eaten by a crocodile. So we finally made it to Ethiopia. After 3 to 4 months to Ethiopia, I didn't have a lot of fond memories of Ethiopia. We stayed there briefly, but we had to be kicked out. And we have to walk again to a country called Kenya. It has been estimated that we have walked over 2,000 miles. And a lot of people were dying. So I have great memories in Kenya. I was in a northern Turkana district called Kakuma Refugee Camp. In this camp, it's literally you're waiting for your death. I remember when I would go and play soccer all day. Forget about education. I didn't have food to eat. I remember when I would be blind temporarily in the refugee camp. But sometime when you lose hope, there are sometimes some people out there that are looking out for you. In 2001, I was resettled to a place called Michigan. And let me tell you, speaking of misunderstanding, let's start from there. When I first came to New York, I almost electrocuted myself. When I arrived in Michigan, they said it's white as snow. I didn't understand it. When I landed, my foster mom, wonderful woman, picked me up. She's about 5'5". And my first question was, Mom, you are too short. Can short people drive? And she said, yes. Let me tell you the first food I ate in America, pizza. I know you guys are pizza lovers. It was great, but let me tell you, it was a lot of misunderstanding. Language was difficult. When we see the sign say dead end, with our little English, we say, wow, you go there and you will never die again. Do not even try to tell us that the man has gone on the moon, okay? That is just, we cannot even comprehend. But eating 3 times a day was a miracle. A refugee camp, you spend 3 more days without eating, but we are eating 3 times a day. Life was great. But I want to take you back. I just went so fast, but let me tell you, as a refugee, as an orphan, I was bullied a lot, and I was used to fighting a lot. I used to be so angry. And because I don't have relative to look upon, I get beat up all the time. So I was known as notorious, if you may say. I was known to be fighting. Even remember, I know my wife is here, don't hear this, where ladies would say, I hope someday you will never get married, because I was used to beat people up in a refugee camp. Now, keep that thought with you. Life was great in America. My foster mom would take us in the morning to the bus station, and we go to school. And by the way, I was not introduced to the formerly school, like a former school. I was sixth grade in Africa. I was put as a freshman in America and say, welcome to America. And my first class was Shakespeare. Be aware of Macbeth. So there was a lot of misunderstanding. But one morning, as I was, my foster mom just dropped me off in the bus. I don't know what happened, but this kid was sitting next to me. He came and said, hey, what's up, monkey? You should have seen my eyes. I grabbed the kid. I wanted to punch him because this is how we do it in Africa. You punch the kid, my cousin got me back. Okay? That's how we do it. Fortunately, my nephew was there. He pulled me back and he said, don't do that. I went to school. That day, I never focused. I wanted to punch the kid so bad. And I started learning about my constitution, try to say this is my constitution and what's not. But what was so stressful is that there were some teachers who I stole the story to, and they didn't want to acknowledge that it was derogatory, it was bad. So the teachers split and said, some said for me, some said no. And that was devastating to me. I went back home, and I got this sign, said, Jacob, you are grounded. That was from my foster mom. I'm like, why would I be grounded when a person called me a monkey? But my mom taught me a very important lesson. She sat me down and said, Jacob, do not ever touch somebody with a shirt again. You have to remember, when I told you I used to fight, that was difficult for me. But she told me, I heard you want to punch that kid. Do not do that. At that night, I told her that, you know what, I'd rather go to Africa. I had enough. I'd rather stay with my cousin in Lansing. And she said, okay. I went to bed. I cried and cried. Because as a refugee, I never thought that coming to this country, the only thing you could get is being called a monkey. But you know what? Instead of going to my cousin, I told my mom, I'm going to have a fight, a good fight. And that is where I start to have a strategy. I start having a tape recorder. People will call me monkey, N-word, you name it. And I will record that and give it to the principal. The student would be punished or actually suspended based on the language and the foul language they have used. I did that for a while to the point that the student would come to me, Jacob, do you have a tape recorder on you? And I say, yes, it's America. You have a freedom to do whatever you want, but I have it. Sometime, I don't even have it on me. But let me tell you, this was a huge turning point for me. Because all I know is violent, is PTSD, is traumatized. But let me ask you one question. Had I punched that kid today, at that time, where would I be today? I went and graduated with my bachelor's, master's, and now at the postdoc at Johns Hopkins Center for Humanitarian Health. And to conclude, that was 2001. Imagine this is 2018. Given the current political environment, that next refugee, that next immigrant, I don't know what it would be like. So I just want to say that the decision one make, like I made, like nonviolent, has a long-term positive outcome than the violent way. So thank you so much, and thank you for coming today.